This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and a very wonderful, safe, and healthy Memorial Day to you and your families. And, of course, never forget those who gave their lives to keep us safe and free. That's what this holiday is all about. And on a weekend where there's mostly canned radio, rebroadcasts of old shows, we're live. So that means you can call us. We're in the doctor's office, and you can join us by calling 888-302-3684 with any question related to medicine or nutrition. We'd be happy to be at your disposal this weekend. And other than the emergency room, where the local doc in the box, urgent care, we're probably your only recourse this weekend. So 888-302-3684 is our number. We got lots to talk about this weekend. You can start dialing, but I'm going to start talking about some of the important news stories of the week. Should the Olympics be canceled? 150 scientists and medical doctors have gotten together and signed a petition saying that the Rio de Janeiro Olympics should be canceled because of the risk of disseminating the Zika virus across the world. They say that with a convergence of thousands of athletes and tens of thousands of tourists and spectators, that this will be a rapid transit system for the Zika virus. People will be bitten by the mosquito. This bloodborne disease will spread to all parts of the world, and chaos will ensue. And so the World Health Organization quickly responded and said, no, we don't think that the Rio de Janeiro Olympics should be canceled. And you might say that, hey, it would be a total catastrophe for the country of Brazil, already beleaguered with a political crisis and an economic crisis, for them to cancel the Olympics. I don't think it's ever happened in history, except perhaps during World War II, when the war precluded an Olympic event. But what the scientists are saying is pushed back against by the World Health Organization, because what they say is it's by no means certain that canceling the Olympics is going to prevent a worldwide outbreak of Zika, or that even if the event takes place as is planned, that there will be a worldwide outbreak of Zika. It's quite uncertain what's going to happen. Health authorities across the world are frantically trying to get ahead of this, watching for the spread of the types of mosquitoes that disseminate Zika. Clearly, there's a risk. There's a risk to individuals who are not pregnant, because a very small percentage of them will have devastating symptoms, symptoms like Guillain-Barré, type of paralysis, very, very severe illness. But it turns out that 80% of people who are bitten by a mosquito that transmits Zika don't even know it. And that's part of the problem, because they may be carriers. They may transmit Zika sexually. So a male athlete bitten by a Zika mosquito coming home after the Olympic event, trying to get wife pregnant, or if the wife indeed is already pregnant, may transmit Zika because it can be sexually transmitted. Not always, but rarely. It's not 100% transmission. It's not that communicable, but there is that risk. And then there's the risk to the newborn. And it turns out a new study in the New England Journal of Medicine, I think it was, shows that there's actually a fairly high rate of birth defects in women who have Zika virus, a scary high rate, double-digit high rate, anywhere from 15% to 35%, according to the study. So this indeed is a problem. The question is whether the Olympics are going to make a difference. With or without the Olympics, it's going to spread. Will stopping the Olympics slow down the epidemic? It's unclear. And maybe, just maybe, just like many health scares in the past, this one won't materialize. Let's hope so. Another big story, superbugs. And this is a scary headline. Here's why doctors are so worried about the new superbug. We've heard about superbugs before. They're antibiotic resistant. They don't respond to our current medications. There's a new one, and it is due to a new gene that bacteria have acquired that makes them antibiotic resistant. The gene is called MCR1, and it was found in a woman from Pennsylvania who had a bad infection last month. It turns out that bacteria have sex. It's not very fun for the bacteria, though. They don't really have such a good time. But they transmit little pieces of genetic information to one another, which means that you can start with just a very few bacteria who've learned to evade antibiotics. And when they have sex with their neighbors, they transmit what are called plasmids, which are little pieces of DNA that may confer special properties to the bacteria, including antibiotic resistance. Well, this one is concerning because it protects bacteria against an antibiotic called colistin, which isn't really used very much because it's harmful to the kidneys and it has to be given intravenously. But it turns out it's the only antibiotic that'll work against a type of superbug called CRE, which is carbapenem-resistant enterobacteria, say. That's why it's the antibiotic of last resort for people with these rare types of infections. And once antibiotics have learned to resist it, well, there ain't nothing left in our arsenal. Now, this is currently not a rampant problem, but there's a tendency for these problems to explode. Starting with a few rare cases of antibiotic resistance, we might see widespread antibiotic resistance, especially in folks who are immunosuppressed. Now, think of how many people are immunosuppressed in this country, people getting cancer therapy, people getting biologic medication for things like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, MS. There are a lot of people walking around with poor immune systems, not to mention individuals with HIV, elderly individuals, people in intensive care units who've practically gotten every antibiotic under the sun and there's almost nothing left for them. These are the people who are at prime risk if we don't come up with newer antibiotics to replace the antibiotics that have become useless. All this argues for less dependency on antibiotics. It also argues for less rampant use of antibiotics in our livestock, where we use antibiotics not just to keep animals healthy and free of infections. They actually put it in animal feed because it makes them fatter. It makes them more, makes the meat more marbled and makes the product more valuable at the marketplace because fatter animals, more profit. Yeah, so why not lace animal feed with antibiotics? Dual purpose. It prevents infections. It makes the animals fatter and heavier. And this may be an effect that carries on to humans because you eat antibiotic-laced meat or poultry or eggs, and you get a little dose of antibiotics in your gastrointestinal tract, and that may cause antibiotic resistance. It may change your intestinal flora, and it may make you a plumper specimen of livestock as well. It's been shown that kids who receive frequent antibiotics as toddlers and youngsters grow up to be fatter adults. Antibiotics are used indiscriminately in this country, and we got to stem the tide of antibiotic resistance. It may start with better agricultural practices, to prevent resistance from emerging in the first place. All right, another big story, and I'll tell you about that in a moment. Cell phones in the crosshairs. A new study suggests that cell phones may really be associated with certain types of cancer. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number. And this is Intelligent Medicine.
If you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I have some exciting news about a new effective non-drug treatment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here to tell you about the Zona Plus. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 in free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com.
As consumers in the 21st century, we are truly fortunate to have an abundance of choices in our daily lives. But when it comes to digestive health, there should only be one choice. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics, easily recognizable in the bright green box on your retailer's shelf. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics stands out among all others. Never freeze-dried, but always live and viable due to a unique 3-year fermentation process, award-winning Dr. O'Hara's probiotics provides the restorative balance needed to support your own exclusive probiotic fingerprint. And that is very important, as no two of us are alike. With over 30 years of research, Dr. O'Hara's probiotics takes digestive and wellness support to a whole new level. So look for the bright green box on your retailer shelf today. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're live on this Memorial Day weekend. We wish you a wonderful Memorial Day weekend holiday, and want to tip our hat to the service people who have safeguarded our freedom and made it possible for us to celebrate. 888-302-3684 is our number. And big story this week, you know, the debate about cell phones has been going on for a long time about cell phone safety. And it's a big deal because there's a lot of money involved. The telecommunications industry is a huge industry. And just like big pharma or the chemical industry or the industry that makes GMOs, genetically modified organisms, there's a lot of money at stake. And studies that point to cell phone hazards are often poo-pooed because, well, they're always alarmists out there, Luddites who don't want to adopt new technology. And for the most part, studies have given cell phones a pass, although there are some concerning studies that suggest that there may be a cell phone cancer link. All right, the biggest study to date, results have just been released, a major U.S. government study on rats has found a link between cell phones and cancer. This is a report from the Wall Street Journal, an explosive finding in the long-running debate about whether mobile phones cause health effects. It's a multi-year peer-reviewed study by the National Toxicology Program. It's a government study. And what they did was they put rats into an underground lab that had 21 specially designed radio frequency chambers to house mice and rats. Over 2,500 rats and mice were exposed to radio frequency energy in various intervals over 2 years. And they used two common frequencies that are comparable to what humans might experience with cell phone exposure. They did it for 9 hours a day. And what they found was kind of concerning, because two unusual tumors were found in the male rats. Not, for some reason, not in the female rats. But what they found was a higher incidence of gliomas, which are a bad kind of cancer that can occur in the brain, and schwannomas of the heart. Now, that's a very, very unusual type of tumor. It doesn't occur spontaneously at all in rats. It does, however, occur in humans. It is sometimes referred to as an acoustic neuroma, and it occurs in the ear, which is interesting because that's precisely where you hold a cell phone hour after hour after hour in the case of some individuals. But a schwannoma of the heart, that is a very, very unusual finding. And it's not clear whether the findings can be generalized to humans. I mean, that's a rat study. I mean, you can't say, well, we've cured all manner of diseases in rats. We've managed to reverse obesity, partially alleviate spinal cord injuries. All kinds of things happen in rats that we haven't yet achieved in humans. But the findings are concerning. And here's something I'll share with you, which suggests that this may not be inapplicable to people. This study from a journal called Tumor Biology, January 2014, association between vestibular schwannomas and mobile phone use. Vestibular schwannomas, acoustic neuromas, grow in the region where energy from mobile phone use is absorbed, right in the ear. And the study looked at 119 patients who'd undergone surgical tumor removal. By the way, this is a tumor that's usually not fatal. It just requires surgery. It may interfere with hearing or balance, but it can be treated. What they found was that there was a definite correlation. Regular mobile phone users showed tumors of a markedly larger volume than those of non-regular users. And they also found what's called laterality, which means use phone on one side, and you're more likely to get a tumor on that side. So, they're saying, not that common. From time to time, this happens. But there's something here. There is some biological effect of the electromagnetic radiation that's emitted by cell phones, and that is a concern. All right, this item has to do with migraines. And in a recent study, melatonin beat a commonly prescribed medication for migraines, amitriptyline, or Elavil, sometimes prescribed for migraines. And what they found was that melatonin, 3 milligrams, beat amitriptyline and was better than placebo in a study of men and women aged 18 to 65. Headache frequency reduction was about 3 days in the migraine, in the melatonin group. Amitriptyline users had a 2-day reduction in headaches, and placebo had a 1-day reduction in headaches. So there was a reduction in headaches with melatonin.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. You can find a lot more on Intelligent Medicine at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine podcast and automatically get a new episode 5 days a week. And please rate and review the podcast on iTunes to help us spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Also go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal, or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. Finally, become a patient at the Hoffman Center. I'll personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the intelligent medicine principles you hear about on the radio show and podcast, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Thanks for listening and for helping to spread the word about Intelligent Medicine.
Do you know there is a silent killer living among us? High blood pressure. It affects nearly 1 in 3 Americans and is a primary risk factor for stroke and heart attack. The CDC estimates that almost 20% of those with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. That's not surprising, since high blood pressure or hypertension is often symptomless. Research studies have shown that a daily dose of aged garlic extract can safely and effectively help to reduce blood pressure, as well as benefiting a number of other cardiovascular risk factors. And the most researched and highly respected aged garlic extract is all-natural Kyolic aged garlic extract. Odorless and organically grown, Kyolic aged garlic extract has been clinically tested to support blood pressure and cardiovascular health. So, along with getting your blood pressure checked regularly, get Kyolic Formula 109 for blood pressure and cardiovascular support today. Available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 gets you into the doctor's office to pose your questions. So call us, 888-302-3684. It's a holiday, but we're alive, taking your phone calls. And if for some reason you're busy, you're at the grill or maybe behind a wheel and you still want to pose a question, you can send us your question. Send it to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll use it as grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast, wherein we answer your questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com. And if you want to share a story about your success with one or another therapy or suggestion that we've made, well, we're glad to hear about it. Pass it along to the rest of our listeners. We get lots and lots of feedback about some of the things that we say here on this program. All right. The Who sang Talk About My Generation. Remember that song? That was about 45 years ago or so, more than that perhaps, in the 1960s. My generation, the baby boomer generation. Well, baby boomer generation is a big demographic bulge, and baby boomers are aging. Many are retiring. Many are entering that phase of life where they're starting to get sick. And according to a new story, there's some bad news here. Baby boomers will become sicker seniors than earlier generations. Now, how can that possibly be? We're smarter, better educated, supposedly more enlightened. We were the spearhead of a real revolution in thinking, or so we thought, as we challenged the values of our elders. And yet, the next generation of senior citizens will be sicker and costlier to the healthcare system over the next 14 years than previous generations. This, according to a new report from the United Health Foundation. We're talking about you, baby boomers. This report looks at the current health status of people ages 50 to 64. That would comprise baby boomers. Compares them to the same age bracket in 1999. And there's some bad news here. Well, first the good news. 50% fewer smokers. Okay, the message is finally resonating. Smoking is bad. People are stopping. Okay, that's the good news. And, you know, hey, look, compare us to the WW2 crew. You know, World War II generation, they put cigarettes in the mouths of soldiers who were in combat situations, basically to calm them down and appease them. Because, you know, what creature comfort would you have when you're sitting in a wet trench in the forests of the Ardennes in the Battle of the Bulge, but, you know, a cigarette. So they gave you free cigarettes and nothing much else and hooked an entire generation on cigs. Baby boomers are pushing back against that trend. So 50% fewer smokers. That's the good, but that's about the only glimmer of hope. The bad is that there will be 55% more people with diabetes. And why is that? Well, it has to do with diet and lifestyle, really. No, primarily, right? Wrong turn on dietary recommendations, especially in the 60s and 70s. The ultra-low-fat diet was a huge blunder. And there's also a real change in the face of poverty in America. Poverty in America used to mean not enough food, not enough food, starvation, undernutrition. And now poverty in America means inability to afford healthy
foods. It's cheaper to buy a fast food burger than to buy a container of strawberries or a head of broccoli. And it's the perverse incentives in our food system that induce people to buy cheap, tasty food that ultimately leads them to obesity and prediabetes and ultimately full-blown diabetes. There's also, in the baby boomer generation, there'll be 25% more people who are obese. And there is a reduction by 9% in those who say they have very good or excellent health. So a senior advisor of the United Health Foundation spokesperson about the study says this dramatic increase has serious implications for the long-term health of those individuals and for the finances of our nation. Have you noticed something? Obamacare got enacted, and while there's certainly some advantages, for the most part, people have seen premiums hiked astronomically and care limited and choices circumscribed. And as a result, we have not solved our healthcare crisis. And one of the problems is that we got more input into the system with people getting older and sicker, and there's going to be hell to pay when that system collapses. And with these kind of numbers, it's very, very scary. And that, you know, that's why prevention, self-care, a grassroots movement to take back our health is ultra important at this time, because we're headed for a crash. All right. 888-302-3684. Homocysteine. Homocysteine briefly enjoyed some popularity in medicine, I would say about 10, 15 years ago, when it was found that people at very high homocysteine had a much higher risk of heart disease. And then they did a couple of studies, in my opinion, not particularly good studies, that suggested that if you gave V vitamins to people with heart disease, that it didn't do much to change their risk of having a heart attack. Okay, so a lot of doctors these days, you ask for a homocysteine, they'll say, sorry, we're into cost containment here. We don't cover that test anymore. And besides, it doesn't matter. Well, think again, because here's an article which shows that there is a major association between higher levels of homocysteine and not so much heart attack. Yeah, there's a higher risk of heart attack, but that's not the big problem. We were looking in the wrong place. An increased risk of cognitive impairment in older adults. Researchers in the University of Western Australia and Royal Perth Hospital, Down Under, recruited 358 individuals age 50 and older, and they checked total plasma homocysteine. By the way, these individuals were depressed. And what they found was that a high percentage of them, about 30%, had high homocysteine levels, which in this study was defined as 13 or more. And the conclusion is that there is a relationship between mood and memory. They also did memory tests on these individuals. Memory was severely impaired in many of these patients who had high homocysteines. And what they found is that by administering B vitamins, we could ameliorate some of that depression and some of the memory problems abated. So here we have an easily modifiable risk factor that many doctors don't want to test for, and many doctors don't even acknowledge that there's a simple, easy way to treat with methylated B vitamins, methyl B12, methylfolate, some B6, maybe some phosphatidylserine, maybe some trimethylglycine. These are some of the things that can impact homocysteine. Vitamin B2 may also have an impact on homocysteine and is part of what helps our patients achieve normal levels. An optimal level, 7 or less. We did an interview with a fabulous researcher, Dr. Dale Bredesen, one of our podcasts this week, very worthwhile listening, which talks about some of the modifiable risk factors for Alzheimer's disease. And that is one. And when we simply test people for, do a SMAC, look at cholesterol, we're just scratching the surface of the tests that we need to do to help people avert cognitive decline, which is something we want to get in early on because prevention is the better part of cure. All right. This item talks about the big debate about whether to be on a low-fat diet or a low-carb diet. And the low-carb folks clearly won out for a long time. But the pendulum is turning, and more people recognizing the benefits of a low-carb diet. A pioneer in this area was Dr. Robert Atkins, of course, reviled at the time, ridiculed. But this story from the New York Times hints at some scientific impropriety involved in this debate, because a study was published in the British Medical Journal that looks at how diet affects heart health. And the results challenge the conventional thinking on saturated fats. You may have heard about the study. It was well publicized, suggested that intake of saturated fats was not associated with higher risk of cardiovascular disease. In fact, substituting polyunsaturated oils for butter and high-fat dairy produced more heart disease. Well, is that a new study? It turns out not. The data is actually very old. It's from the late 1960s and early 70s. And it's likely that that information was deep-sixed, suppressed for political reasons, because the nutrition debate was highly charged. Here's what happened. The study entitled the Minnesota Coronary Experiment was actually a pretty well-designed study, and it was conducted in a nursing home and six state mental hospitals from 1968 to 1973. 9,400 men and women participated, and what they found was kind of surprising. They had a regular diet, and then they had what was called a heart-healthy diet. It encouraged a reduction in the amount of calories from saturated fats like animal fats and butter, and more fat was brought in from unsaturated fats, particularly corn oil, rich in linoleic acid. It was thought, oh, this is going to really help the heart disease. Well, it turns out the low saturated fat diet actually did lower cholesterol. Okay, so that's good. Total serum cholesterol dropped. But, and here's the big but, there was no decreased risk of death. And if anything, there was an increased death rate in those on the, quote, heart-healthy diet, especially those 65 years and older. And those who had the greatest reduction in cholesterol, they had a higher risk of death. Lowering cholesterol by 30 points was associated with a 22% increase in the risk of death from any cause. And so what happened to the study? It didn't get published until 2016. Interesting, because the two principal investigators on the Minnesota study were a doctor named Ivan France, along with Ansel Keys. Ansel Keys was the major proponent of the low-fat diet. He died in 2004, but he kept his secret with him that this study didn't bear out his theory. And so it's hard to know, you know, did this study just get lost in the shuffle or something more insidious? Did they bury the results of the study? Maybe they just forgot to write it up. But no, more likely, this study didn't square with their particular hobby horse hypothesis, which is that low-fat diet was the right way to go when it comes to heart prevention. And, you know, when people's careers are built on certain ideas, it's hard not to imagine that certain biases come into play. And this may be a cardinal example of that. Unfortunately, so many people have sickened and died based on the wrong conclusions of studies that attempted to support the low-fat diet hypothesis. It's truly a tragedy. 888-302-3684. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor here, president of the Texas Organic Research Center. As you probably know, it's a toxic world out there, but we can do something about it. Become knowledgeable consumers and use products that are safe and healthy, such as natural supplements that help protect the body's cells from toxic exposure. One of my favorites is Reg Active with ME3, the only probiotic proven to actually produce glutathione in the body. It's the body's master antioxidant, unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals and exposure to environmental toxins. Glutathione decreases as we age. Reg Active is great for rebuilding it, and I strongly recommend it.
Look for Reg Active at Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold. Revolutionary. Remarkable. Reg Active.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. A very wonderful Memorial Day to you and your family. And let's talk now to David from Creston, Iowa. How you doing, David?
How are you doing, Doc?
Hey, good, thanks.
I got a quick. I've been doing some research on my own since I've been listening to you.
Yeah, good.
About what this chemical is that they put in the food that is making me a little bit. I'm getting to where I don't want to eat anything. It has flour in it.
Right.
And actually, after I eat a meal, and I force myself to eat this stuff, I can smell this chemical on my skin. So,
and what is the chemical in question?
Well, I don't know what it is. My wife said it's the nitrates that they put in the ground or something. She thinks she's an RN, mm-hmm. so she does okay. a lot of research on this stuff. So.
So you're saying that grain products, all grain products, create this chemical smell in your body?
Yes, they do. Anything that's baked like these little pies and things.
Right. Yeah. So I could think of a couple of things. You know, one is that it's thought that certain baked goods contain acrylamides. That's a product of the baking. Then, of course, there's all the stuff that they spray on the food, especially if it's not organic. And the third possibility is that, you may have some kind of reaction to the food. You know, we call this the auto-brewery syndrome or auto-fermentation syndrome, whereby when you eat some kind of refined carbohydrates or flour products, your gut turns into a distillery, you know, like Kentucky Moonshine, and you make alcohol and other chemicals and may impart some kind of chemical odor to your body. I mean, that's a possibility. I'm not, I don't think that, you should be placed in the category of people who believe in UFO abduction. I believe what you're saying. It's just not clear what is the cause of the problem, whether it's the chemicals that are in the food. Certainly there are those, or whether it's your individual reaction to the foods that other people might consume without a problem. You know, so we got to do a little analysis, figure out what's going on there. But in the meantime, how about, curbing your intake of grains instead of eating, flour products. You know, you can get some carbohydrates from some potatoes or sweet potatoes or squash. If you want to go on a low carbohydrate diet, that's not bad either, because studies show that that actually has salutary effects. Weight loss, change your microbiome in a good way, even cholesterol optimization. Paradoxically, when you eat saturated fats and low carbs, so you could give that a shot.
Yeah, the people I talk to, they all say, I wanted to find out from the individual, so whenever I meet somebody, I always ask them, I said, the food's always starting to taste the same in certain foods and everything, and mm-hmm. most of the people I talk to, almost all of them say, it all kind of tastes the same now, so, I know it's out there, but...
I think it may be an Iowa-based phenomenon, along with crop circles. I don't know what's going on out there in Iowa, but there's a lot of chemicals being put into the soil, I'm afraid.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks. And thanks for listening, David. Let's talk to Irene. We got time for a question from Irene. How you doing?
Okay. My question is, I have the usual symptoms of GERD, like the belching and the pain in the center of my chest. And sometimes when I swallow food, it kind of hurts going down. But I also have, like, when I'm, if I go for a walk or something, the beginning of my walk, I feel that same pain in the center of my chest. I don't know.
Okay, so the concern there is, you know, when you have GERD and simultaneously you have discomfort and exertion, clearly you probably have GERD, but the concern is that maybe you got a heart problem because exertional chest pain needs to be worked up. So you should go to your doctor, and your doctor is likely to do some basic tests, but may refer you to a cardiologist for a stress test just to make sure that exertional pain is actually gastro. Oh, so you did, and it was normal. Okay. So given that you got GERD, I mean, here's some suggestions. You need to go on a lower-carb diet. We sometimes refer to that as a FODMAPS diet, very helpful for GERD, or GERD diet. Also, you may want to take DGL in large amounts, DGL 6 to 8 capsules a day. There's something called Endofen as well, which can be beneficial. So give those things a shot. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.